From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the sixth day of May 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, leaders in Washington, D.C. say they'll look to provide adequate funding for agricultural research in the next farm bill. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he'll move swiftly to have his legislative body cut big oil subsidies. And scientists at Stanford and Columbia claim climate change has cut global wheat and corn output by 3% over the last 30 years. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll tell you how one weed has developed its own version of stacked herbicide resistance. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
On this Friday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished with the May wheat up 2 cents at $7.24.5, July at $7.59.5, 5.5 higher. On the afternoon, the hard red July contract in Kansas City settled 17 cents higher at $8.74. Back in the corn pit from Chicago, a $6.82¾ settlement price for the May contract, 22¼ cents lower. July futures at $6.86¼, down 22½, and September at $6.68¼, 19½ cents lower. December futures at $6.40¼, down 15½, and the March of next year, down 16 cents at $6.50½. Let's go out to the December 2012 because it'll be fun. $5.73¼, down 15½. May soybean futures, $13.25, up 5¼. July, $13.26, up 4¼. And the August at $13.25½, 4¾ higher. And November beans at $13.08, up 1¾. January futures at $13.17, 2¼ cents higher on the day. May bean meal futures at $3.44.90, up $2.20. May bean oil at $55.37, up a penny on the afternoon. Mercantile exchange numbers finished a dime higher in the June live cattle at $109.85. The May feeders at $129.12½, up 50 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Lean hog futures settled $93.35 today, up $1.77½. The outside markets, crude oil futures, $97.53 a barrel, down $2.27. Ethanol in the June contract at $2.52¾ cents, up 5Ⅾ cents, actually down 5Ⅾ cents. Natural gas at $4.24⅙, that's a penny and a half lower. June heating oil or diesel fuel down 3⅞ cents at $2.85 even. And the gold futures on the day settled at $1,491.20, up $10.30. The Dow at 12,617, just about 33 points higher. The dollar at 74.84, up 0.64, and the CRB at 337.35, down 3.72 on this Friday afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say for this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high near 67 degrees, west winds at about 13 miles an hour. Tonight, increasing clouds, as low of around 50 degrees, southwest winds at 7 to 9. Saturday, we should see showers and thunderstorms in the Urbana-Champaign area, mainly before 1 o'clock, mostly cloudy. Then high near 69 degrees, southwest winds at 10 to 16, they'll gust to 23. The chance of precip during the day Saturday, 60%. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low 51. West, southwest winds at about 5 miles an hour. Sunday, partly sunny, a high near 73 degrees. Calm winds out of the east at 4 to 7. And then Sunday night, a 30% chance of showers. Again, thunderstorms after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 55 degrees. On Monday, a 30% chance of showers, sunny, a high of 75. Monday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 63. And Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 63. More on the weather in a moment.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Friday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Frank Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, is on the phone line with us today, as he always is, to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
Hey, anybody moving in your area in the field?
Not much. I've heard some spraying getting done and a little bit of light field work getting done. There were some guys moving on some very, very hilly ground a couple nights ago, but I would say in the better dirt, I would say not. In fact, from Lafayette on up north, there was anywhere from 3/10 to a half an inch. I talked to guys south of the beef house. They also got 3/10 to 4/10 in the overnight. So very little going on, if anything.
Indeed. So then you turn your attention to the marketplace, and there was a lot going on today.
Not what we wanted either.
No. Can you walk me through it, please?
But I want to say, you know, we had this rumor last week that you and I kind of chuckled about. Well, I'm going to start a new rumor. I think that maybe Bin Laden was long corn. They had to close his account, and they had to get out of all his positions.
All at once, right?
All at once.
Well, if that was the case, then it's going to come back. After if it's all at once, it's got to come back, right?
Well, I guess to walk you through it very simply, it would be a very similar trade, kind of like 2008. It seemed a lot like May of 2008. Remember, we had the Iowa flooding back in 2008 during May, and the corn was being led lower by the outside markets. And I think that's, simply put, kind of the exact, almost the exact identical thing that's happened here in terms of the macro fundamentals, those outside market fundamentals overpowering the more bullish wheat and corn supply micro fundamentals and beans. They were able to find, in fact, the best support, not just today, but for a greater part of the week, a greater share of the week, mainly because they didn't have many fundamentals to swim one way or the other. It seemed like they were probably on the sidelines, not getting as much heck beat out of them, so to speak.
Yesterday on this program, Daryl Good referred to the outside markets as a mini macro fundamental explosion to the downside. He didn't use those last two words, but I couldn't come up with the final part of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it was just the outside markets. But which outside markets are the big influence at this point?
Well, keep in mind, I think that because the index funds were the big liquidators here, because they carry the basket of commodities, that you have to put each and every commodity that they trade in the same basket. And so when they take off, I think the silver and the hogs were the majority leaders to the downside these past 2 weeks, Todd, and I think it was mainly because demand caught up with the higher meat prices, and the cold storage numbers from 2 weeks ago really were pretty bearish for the hogs. In the silver, I'm one of those people that believe the higher and higher and higher margin calls essentially forced out the trade. I've heard a lot of people talk about the end of QE2 and the fact that the Fed is going to stop things in June with quantitative easing and the easy monetary policy. I've been writing a lot about that. A lot of people have been saying that's why the funds are getting out. Maybe that's partially true, but I think that the vast majority of that has not been factored in yet, and I simply say that because if we felt that way in the markets as a whole, bond yields would be going up, and that's what really would scare me. You know, if I had to say, gosh, guys, we need to get a lot more concerned about this break becoming more long-lasting and index fund money not coming back like it did in May of 08. It came back for about a month, month and a half. It was re-implemented. We made new highs. If I were not going to expect that type of thing to happen, I would be looking to the bonds and the equities to turn sharply lower. That would concern me enough to make me get some paper hedges in place.
All right, let's take a moment and do some teaching, and maybe you can teach me along the way. The margin calls in the silver started to come when and why? I mean, why did they expand? Why did they get larger?
Well, volatility. It's a formulation that volatility and open interest in those types of things, it's more or less a formula that the exchange uses to be able to cover their exposure, for lack of a better term. It started probably around 2 to 3 weeks ago, and you realize that we had a strong run-up from January through February, through March, through into April, and now what we've done in these first 10 days or 6 days of May is eroded all the gains, and we're back down to levels not seen since January. And I think at one point, I think the margin in silver got up to $16,200 or $16,300 a contract. That's not far from what a full S&P contract is. So I think that was continuing to constrain and tighten the liquidity, and it was causing funds to say, let's go ahead and take our money off the table because our leverage is getting too big, essentially.
Yeah, so it sounds to me as if the formula wasn't set up right simply because it wasn't forcing people out earlier rather than later. They just kept buying into it, or maybe there was computer-driven buying that didn't care about the margin call or didn't have that in the formula for the purchasing. It seems a bit odd.
Well, it may be. I think the main thing we want to focus on is the idea that when the margin goes up, the exchange recognizes that there's greater volatility, and at some point in those computer-generated trades, your leverage gets too high. In other words, the margin exposure is too great for the potential reward, and then you look at the parabolic move up, and you start looking at other factors like momentum and open interest. And it was just like in corn, this past week or a week ago Monday, I got a Newswire call, and they said, what do you think about Monday's big up day, and yet the open interest was down? And, hey, you got to call it like you see it and say, you don't want to see that continue. You want open interest to be going up when the market's going up, and you don't want open interest to be going up when the market's going down. So those kind of things. I'm sure the margin wasn't the major, wasn't all the factors, but I would put it as one of the major factors to what caused the silver break.
All right. So silver breaks, it's one of the outside influences in the marketplace. When we look at the week for corn and for soybeans, corn was down in the nearby May, 71 and a quarter cents. December futures much better, 29 and a quarter lower still. May beans were off 67 and three quarters. The November at 65 and three quarters lower on the week. Can you put it all into context with the outside market? I know you've talked about the silver and the hogs having an influence on this. And it sounds to me as if you're pretty convinced that there might be a near-term bottom somewhere here. Is that right?
I think there is, especially if the micro fundamentals come back. And what I mean by that is the weather stays wet for the corn, the weather stays hot and dry for the wheat. The USDA doesn't give us a wildly negative USDA report next week, and the crude oil and the silver and hogs find some stability because the equities markets and the bond markets don't turn lower. I think all those are a recipe for the idea that the commodity indexes are done letting go. I looked at all the major commodity indexes that I track, and we're within 2 to 3% of the major support lines in those commodity indices, whether it's the overall indice or it's an agricultural index, a sub-index. If you see the equities and bonds go lower, that's where I get worried that we're going to fall through those major support levels, Todd. But if we hit those major support levels and the outside markets are firm and these USDA numbers and the weather continue to be on the side of a bounce, I think you'll get your bounce.
Okay, and then Informa was out with some numbers for acreage today. They're at 91.9 for corn. That's 300,000 less than the 92.2 that the United States Department of Agriculture has. 76 million for the soybeans. That's 600,000 less than the 76.6 that USDA has. Much to talk about in those numbers?
Yeah, I think that was a big separation between why corn fell. One of the reasons why corn fell so much, but beans didn't. I was surprised that the corn was only down 300,000 acres. Contacts at the floor were the same. I think most people were probably, at least that I talked to, were expecting at least a 500,000 less. And the bigger, more fundamentally friendly factor that I think helped support the beans quite a bit was beans were down 600,000 acres. And it's puzzling to me because you've got corn down 300, you've got spring wheat down 360. How can you get beans then down another 600? You'd think that the beans would go into the corn acres that were lost and into the spring wheat acres that were lost. So when I looked back and looked in more detail, this was still a survey-based update in the May numbers that Informa gave us today was still survey-based, and I think it's probably somewhat backward-looking and not really figuring in or factoring in all the weather that we've seen the last 20 or 30 days and the planting progress and so on and so forth.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Dave Dickey is here now to take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Debbie Stabenow says one of her goals in the upcoming rewrite of farm legislation is to provide adequate funding for agricultural research. Stabenow says, quote, "We need to have higher yields and other technologies for the future." However, Stabenow acknowledges that the move to Congress away from earmarks may thwart some research efforts. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he plans to act immediately on a measure to repeal federal tax subsidies for oil companies. In letters to colleagues, Reid urged senators to seriously consider an effort to reduce subsidies to oil and gas companies, which are estimated to total between $3.5 billion and $4.5 billion annually. The U.S. government says that farmers in West Central Missouri and Eastern Kansas are eligible for federal payments if they plant biomass crops. It was the first designation by the Agriculture Department of a project area through the Biomass Crop Assistance Program. Up to 50,000 acres in 30 counties in West Central Missouri and 9 counties in Eastern Kansas can be enrolled in the project. Scientists at Stanford and Columbia Universities say that climate change cut global wheat and corn output by more than 3% over the past three decades compared to growth projections without a rise in temperatures. The impacts translated into up to a 20% higher average for commodity prices before accounting for other factors, according to the paper published in the journal Science. The models were based on actual data, which showed rising temperatures across nearly all of the world's main growing regions, with the exception of the United States. The Wheat Quality Council Tour pegs the 2011 Kansas wheat crop at 37.4 bushels per acre, with total production around 256.7 million bushels. Kansas planted 8.8 million acres to wheat this year, but abandonment rates likely will be much higher than average, 20 to 25%, due to severe drought conditions and late emergence. Scouts spent 3 days measuring and calculating wheat yields in 561 fields. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. That second program will record at 4:30 this afternoon and post to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this Friday evening. Our guest by phone, Emerson Napsiger, agronomist here at the University of Illinois, to take up the cold and wet weather and what impact it might have on both the Western and the Eastern Corn Belt planting season. In studio with us, Paul Cooley, Dan Zwicker, and Dwayne Nelson. Should be a great show. You can listen to it online this evening at willag.org. Now, up next, you know, glyphosate-resistant water hemp is a problem in the Midwest, but it's a whole lot bigger than that. I'll tell you how the weed has developed stacked resistance to as many as 4 different types of herbicides.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Farmers are now used to hearing the word stacked as it relates to corn hybrids. There are triple stacks and smart stacks, and all have to do with the genes in the plant. Genes that may have been modified to help the plant fight off an insect pest or survive being sprayed with an herbicide that should kill it. Nature doesn't take a back seat on this front. Weeds and insects, when confronted often enough by the same control method, will adapt naturally. Take water hemp, for example. It is a weed farmers didn't worry about a few decades ago. Then, as herbicides controlled other weeds, the water hemp made a move on row crop fields. Water hemp produces an enormous number of seeds and came up early in the year. So that's when farmers sprayed it. The weed adapted, and now it comes up all season long. And not only that, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager, water hemp has developed stacked herbicide resistance. It's resistant to more than just glyphosate. That's the herbicide most farmers think of as it's related to the weed, says Hager.
What we tend to think of as one of the most problematic glyphosate-resistant species that we currently deal with here in Illinois is glyphosate-resistant water hemp. And unfortunately, we have issues with water hemp that are not related just simply to resistance to glyphosate, which in itself is certainly of concern, but of biotypes that actually have multiple or stacked resistance in them. And by that, we mean we've characterized populations down through the years that are maybe resistant to two herbicide families or three herbicide families. And recently, we've actually characterized a biotype from western Illinois that's actually resistant to four different herbicide families within the same plant.
Hager and his colleagues at Illinois, including a herbicide physiologist, a geneticist, and a modeling specialist, are working to understand how herbicide resistance develops in a weed population and then spreads across the landscape. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Usually at this time, we talk with Bruce Bostert at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. I forgot that he told me he wouldn't be there. That's okay, because I have on hand Daryl Goodstill from yesterday, and it's about the right length. So we'll let you listen to what Daryl has to say about the marketplace right now.
Well, I mean, most of the pressure has been in old crop prices, and it's really been, I think, the some of the liquidation we're seeing is in reaction to what many are seeing is kind of a mini macroeconomic meltdown here. China's tightening its economic situation. There's really concern about economic performance here in the U.S. We saw unemployment claims jump again this past week. So, and we've seen a pretty weak export demand for corn in recent weeks. A low level of shipments and very small new sales of corn. And so I think when folks are looking to next week's WASDE report from the USDA. They're kind of penciling in a smaller export number and bigger carryover stocks of corn. So they're kind of taking the attitude that rationing has been accomplished on old crop. We're seeing some declining consumption. And so the weakness really started in old crop corn. Now, more recently, has spilled over into new crop, although that spread between July and December has narrowed up quite a bit, but I think there is a growing thinking that more of the crop will be planted in a timely fashion this year than what the market thought just a week ago. And that's clearly going to happen, I think, kind of from northwest Illinois through Iowa and Nebraska. We're looking for awfully good planting progress next week, but the southern part of the Corn Belt into Indiana, Ohio, just not much progress. So at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of corn nationally that's planted after the optimum date this year. And that, I think, has some significant impacts for yield expectations on a national basis that we'll have to own up to at some point.
That's U of I Ag economist Daryl Good. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
It's National Caramel Popcorn Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Massachusetts created the first inspector of milk position in the U.S. It was not long before a report showed that milk sold in Boston restaurants was often diluted with as much as 40% water, and chemicals were added to make the diluted milk appear white. The diluted milk sold for as much as 5 cents a glass when fair market value for good milk was 8 cents a quart. In 1930, Twinkies went on sale for the first time with a banana cream filling. But in World War II, there was a banana shortage, and vanilla cream became the standard filling. By the way, early Twinkies had to be eaten almost immediately. The eggs, milk, and butter gave the Twinkie a shelf life of just 2 days. In 1932, C. Glenn King at the University of Pittsburgh isolated vitamin C from lemon juice. In 1938, Roy J. Plunkett accidentally discovered Teflon. And in 1954, TV dinners were introduced to the public. C.A. Swanson and Sons introduced the first TV dinner, roast turkey with stuffing and gravy, sweet potatoes and peas. It sold for 98 cents and came in an aluminum tray ready to pop into the oven. Supposedly, executive director Gerald Thomas came up with the idea when the company had tons of leftover turkey from Thanksgiving. The idea for the aluminum trays came from the trays used for airline food. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, now joins us to tell us about the agricultural weather forecast for the weekend and beyond. Thanks, Steve, for being with us.
Glad to be here, Todd.
So let's start with tonight and tomorrow. It looks like there'll be some rain somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, it doesn't look very bad. I mean, scattered showers. You know, last night's rain came through, and there was one or two locations that received up to a half inch of rain, but most of it was less than a quarter inch, and back much of Champaign County between a tenth and a third. So I wouldn't expect much more than that tomorrow morning, maybe a few showers, but that'll be moving out probably by midday. And Sunday looks like a nice dry day. It looks, in some respects, a little unsettled aloft, which means that we may have a little disturbances kicking off scattered showers through Monday and maybe Tuesday, but nothing really in terms of wet weather. Looks like the next big one might be Thursday when we get a strong cold front coming through to bring any substantial rain. And beyond that, I'm a little leery of the forecast because it's showing a large upper-level low over the eastern U.S., which would tend to keep us cold and damp, and I'm not sure I quite believe that yet beyond next weekend.
Farmers are going to lean your way as long as it's a high pressure and
yep.
It's sunny.
Well, it looks like we will get some a good window in here this week to get in the field because not everybody's going to get the rain, and I've seen some, at least what it appears to be, substantial drying the last few days.
Yeah, so that's in the immediate area. Anything different to the east or to the west or to the south for them?
Well, the south is a problem because of all the flooding. The amounts of rain that have fallen in southern Illinois, southern Missouri, southern Indiana, the Ohio River Valley have been phenomenal. I mean, in a 12-day period, there was a couple of stations there that got over 20 inches of rain. That's almost half their annual total. So the southern part of the region and along the Ohio Valley is going to take a while to dry out. The river levels are still well above the flood stage, and it's going to take some time for that to come down. Fortunately, it looks like the pattern sort of shifting a lot of the heavier rain a little bit further north, such as it is, and that should spare them, you know, any kind of fallback, you know, with return to extreme flooding or anything.
Anything else that we ought to be aware of as we look forward into the next week and a half?
No, it looks like there's a little dryness up in Minnesota down through Iowa, but that might get remedied here in the next week or so. But in general, I think other than Illinois, Indiana, and further south, and southern Missouri, conditions for planting probably aren't going to be too bad because they won't get a whole lot of rain, and it's been fairly dry up north. So I think if we get a few days of dry weather this week, we should be in good shape.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org for our Commodity Week program. We'll record that at 4:30 this afternoon. Emerson Nafziger will be our guest, the panelist in studio, including Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets at willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.